start of podcast, and then I'm going to do the intro, and then we'll just jump into it. You good?
Yep.
All right. Thank you for your patience there. I meant to have that done earlier. All right, chat. Everyone behave. Be on their best behavior.
Nerd is a word of positivity, taking it back from the negative world.
Oh my god. Starting a podcast. All right.
Add the spices.
We'll try.
We'll try, of course. All right. Hello and welcome back to USBR Guest Cybersecurity Tips. I'm Theo, here to help you break down cybersecurity news and hacks and how they affect you. However, again, today I'm interviewing Tech Penguin, who's a senior penetration tester. We recorded the interview in an open Discord voice channel with video while monitoring chat with text-to-speech developed by Security Live. The Tech Penguin has 5 years' experience as a penetration tester with a different entry to the cybersecurity industry, and we're very excited to talk to him. Also, as usual, I usually send the people I interview a list of questions to answer, and Tech Penguin did just that, offering well thought and honest answers. You can find the document linked on the episode page on my GitHub. This is a little longer than normal, so feel free to speed it up. Thank you for listening and enjoy. Tech Penguin, how are you doing today? You're over in Discord here.
Yeah, I'm well, actually not so well. I'm a little bit sick, as you might hear, but other than that, I'm doing great.
Okay. Yeah, you sound just fine.
Okay, yeah. I don't feel just fine, so.
Cool, cool. So I'm just going to run down this, the questionnaire I usually send people. It kind of keeps me on track. But also, if you see something else you want to deep dive or you want to take a tangent on, or if chat asks us a question, then we can do that as well. So you are located in the Netherlands. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And you're only 20. And how old are you?
I'm 27.
Good for you.
I started pen testing when I was 21, so that's been a while.
You know what? While we're thinking about that, why are you? Oh, Cav, are you kidding me? Well, I have a quick interruption, or he's going to keep barking at me. Give me 1 second, and I'll be right back. No one's up, Cav. That's about right.
Yeah.
That's my dog. Perfect timing.
Dogs are good at that.
All right. What do you do in your downtime?
Well, it entirely depends. I play guitar. I hang out with friends. I spent quite a lot of downtime learning as well. For InfoSec, which seems like a bit of a no-life thing to do, and I guess it is. I do read a lot. Yeah, that's mostly it.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, because it's important. You got to have downtime. You got to be able to unplug.
It's important. And also, I don't work 40-hour weeks. I work 32. Yeah, 32. So I have a bit more downtime than most people. So,
Okay. Interesting. Good. I asked you about previous jobs and you said not applicable. So did you, you just entered the cybersecurity?
No, it's a bit of a long story, but I got into IT fairly young. I think I was 14 when I first learned PHP. I think it was like 5.3 or something.
Okay.
And I made a bunch of websites and I've always been interested in it. And then after high school, I spent half a year joining a company that did development. And I was responsible for web application development and mostly front-end implementation of things other people made. And I did that for half a year. And then I got fired because there was just no place for me. And I didn't really have the skill set to be fully used useful there. And then I did a sped up education platform for about 6 months to 8 months, which just introduced the basics of web or IT, I would say.
Okay.
Basic networking, all these kinds of things, nothing too complicated. And then got thrusted into an internship and for 6 months. And after that internship, I got hired.
Okay, so and that touched a little bit on, okay, we'll come back to that because there's another aspect, there's another aspect of that, so cool.
Yeah.
All right, and your current role is what with the company?
Well, I am a senior pen tester. We are a fairly small company. We have 8 people working there, so official titles don't mean that much.
Okay.
My role mostly encompasses web application pen testing. That's what I've been doing mostly. I have done a fair bit of exploit development, normal development for a product that we're making, and just network pen testing and red teaming as of late as well.
Okay.
But mostly web application pen testing is where my core skill set lies.
Okay. So, do you think that comes from your background with knowing PHP?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
So it was just a skill set that you had developed and gravitated towards doing web app pen testing?
No, I don't even think so. I think when I started my internship, the market for web app pen testing is really big.
Okay.
And I sort of feel like I didn't know a whole lot when I started. And I learned most of the things that I know now on the job.
Okay.
Of course, like there is like the basic background that I had before. But I think I learned most on the job. And because it is a sort of a mentorship type thing when you're an intern.
Mm-hmm.
And my mentor was really good at web app pen testing, and that was just a natural focus. And also because just most of the money is being made for us, at least in web app pen testing.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit more. No, we're going to get there. I want to jump to it because I think it's interesting. I think that dynamic's interesting that you found, which is wonderful. So education level, what is your, you have high school, university, do you, what's your...
I don't have any university degree or anything.
Okay.
High school, it's a bit of a complex story, but basically I got a diploma and sort of dropped out at the same time. It works a bit differently here in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I got my basic education to the point where we're required by law to have education, actually. Okay. To a certain degree,
mm-hmm.
And I got that, and after that, nothing else.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's wonderful to hear. I imagine there's a bit of self-start and drive that you have to acquire knowledge beyond high school.
I've always been like really interested in learning, and it's one of my favorite things to do. It's just that I felt high school was not really meant for people that learn the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not much for remembering facts and learning things out of my head. That's not my greatest strength, and I get bored easily. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
We've had conversations either in voice chat, or you've been in the Discord, or in the chat on Twitch. But we've had discussions before about how, and that's some things that we were similar, is that I absolutely despise, like, just memorization for memorization. And when I sit down with material, I like to sit down with it, and I like to deep dive on it and get dirty and hands on keyboard. So that's interesting you said that. We're a similar like that.
Yeah, unfortunately sometimes you can't escape it.
Yep, I'm learning that with certificate study. Yep. So you know what, let's jump to that now, and then we can get back to the outline here. But so how did you land your job in cybersecurity? Can you kind of give us an outline of, you know, so, where you were and how it transpired?
I got my internship. Basically, I looked at a couple of companies with the help from some people to look for an internship. I looked at an other one. I'm not gonna name names.
No, you don't have to.
I didn't like the culture there. I felt, well, I looked around for a day, or not even a day, a little bit, and I felt like I couldn't really talk to the people. And when I'm not really able to talk with people, it quickly becomes,
I
didn't see myself working there, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the company I'm currently at. They looked for a new intern at the time, and they felt really nice. I got an internship for 6 months, unpaid.
Okay. And, unpaid.
You need to be able to afford that. I am lucky enough that I was able to afford it with my job. But yeah. And after that, I got hired. So and I still work for the same company all these years later.
Nice. Now, what I wanted to ask you about, or what you had talked about, was that you got a mentor on the job. Is that something that, real quick before you answer, is that something that the company set up, like you're paired up with a senior programmer, or this was someone who, okay.
When I joined the company, it were four people besides me, I think, and one quickly left. And there was one senior pen tester there, and he just sort of naturally gravitated towards the role of mentorship, and it was his task to get me up and running, and also to be able to make sure that I could actually pen test before the time my internship is over. And it sort of went very natural. Also, I have to clarify, a mentorship in this case doesn't mean he prepares all kinds of materials. Sometimes it's as easy as pointing you to the right place to start learning. And that was the first, I think, month of my internship was mostly learning under him I started some shadow testing. In case you don't know what it means, that means
What is that?
It means basically a senior pen tester or pen tester does a pen test, and you do the same pen test, then you're not allowed to look at what he does.
Okay, all right.
And then you have a nice comparison at the end of it to see what you missed, and he will ask critical questions of you and to see how you think and how you approach certain things, what you could do better, maybe what he could do better. Sometimes the most useful thing for a pen tester is to have a mentee that shows you a new way to think about things. And that happened for a while. And then, I sort of felt during those 6 months that I needed to prove myself. So I went quite hardcore on the learning part. And it's also been a while since that's the case. There are way better learning materials out there now than there were back then. And also, it has become more complex nowadays to learn everything. That's basically it.
Okay. So, what about now? You were on there for 6 months in the internship, and then they extended an offer to you to stay on.
Yeah.
Okay. What What do you think? Was it one thing? Was it multiple things? What do you? Because you said you had to went out and proved yourself, but could you boil it down to a couple things that you think that?
I think the most important ones are showing motivation. So showing that you really want to do the work and you enjoy doing it, mm-hmm. and curiosity. So showing like you're curious, you want to learn more about it. Sometimes being obnoxious in your curiosity to people. The other one is just showing you're capable. It sounds a bit arrogant to say, but I think pen testing is actually quite difficult to get into because there's so much you need to learn. And if you're not capable of learning that much, one way or another, you're not going to make it. And I think that's also one really important aspect to show. And it might have been more so for me because of the timeline of 6 months and not the untraditional way to get into it. But I think those are the most important aspects. So the will to learn more, showing that I can actually learn and reason about the things that I do learn. And also what really helps when you start is showing up on time, you know.
Showing up on time early. Yes.
That helps a lot. There's a fun little story I have there. The first day of my internship, I showed up at 8:30, which was for my previous job the normal time to arrive. And the door was locked and nobody was there for like another hour. We have a bit of a relaxed company culture, to say the least.
Yeah. So, well, you were early.
Yeah, I was early. Now I'm always late.
Yeah. Well, I tell people too, if they ever, they're like, my son's at a point where he's starting to be required to show up places like at a certain time. And Super Stay Up just nailed it. Yep. If you're if you're on time, you're late. If you're early, you're on time. That's a great mindset to have. You just like, and especially if you're starting someplace, you are being, in my opinion, you're being somewhat disrespectful to the other person's time, to the, you know what I mean? To the people training you or the people hiring you on or bringing you up to speed, if you're late. That was a great, thank you, Super Stay Up. We talked about the mentorship. What have you taught yourself prior to getting your job and after?
That's a long list of things. So I knew how to program, but not well, I would say. I knew to a degree. I knew C sharp. I knew the basics of C and C++. I knew PHP quite well.
And these are things you taught yourself. You weren't picking them up in high school. That was okay. All right.
Just in my spare time when I was like 14, I started with these things. And then during the education, I learned Python, but it was fairly easy for me to learn a new language at that point because I already had like a fairly big background in like learning programming languages.
Mm-hmm.
And just to stress, I wasn't anywhere close to good at those languages. I just knew how to write things in it and get things done. Mm-hmm. Struggle with it. I think that those are the most relevant parts that I learned myself, actually. And the rest I sort of learned into the fairly quick form of education. There's lots of like tiny little things. Nowadays, I learn myself a lot, but before I started, it's mostly just programming.
Okay. And you said after it's like little bits of this and little bits of that.
Yeah.
I'm leading you towards what I normally will tell people about prior to getting your job, you should be working on languages. You should be working on a certain part of pen testing. You should be, you know, working on projects that you can add to your resume or add to a GitHub or add to a blog that shows companies that you know how to do what you say you can do. But then after you, because you have to keep learning, it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop in our industry. In a lot of industries, it doesn't stop, but especially in cybersecurity, you should be learning little bits and pieces of this or how this service within an application can be exploited or whatever it is that you're working on. Like, you may have even seen just this month or on your past one of your past engagements, Penguin, that if you encountered something you've never seen before, so you have to go and research and figure out how to exploit it or how to mess with it.
Yeah, I agree. You always have to keep learning. For a starter, I think it's great to have something of a resume, but I personally, when I'm like having people that apply for jobs come mm-hmm. over, I look a little bit less at their GitHub. I made the mistake once of hiring just based on like what somebody says, and or not hiring, trying out somebody.
Okay.
Somebody says and how they act, and it's difficult. I would say everything helps. So create a GitHub. It definitely helps. It is not decisive. Showing enthusiasm is enthusiasm. My English is a bit
no. You're
bad.
Good. Enthusiasm, yeah, we can get it.
Enthusiasm, yeah. Is I think maybe even more important. The ability to learn is important. I think the prior knowledge, having the base of your prior knowledge, is the one thing that people try to assess starters with the most. So, do you know what SQL does? Do you know how a database works, what is a client-server model, like the not necessarily things you think about a whole lot, but things that you sort of are supposed to know when you start working in tech.
Sorry.
And then, yeah, on the note of learning yourself, I think actually as a beginner, it's actually quite easy compared to an intermediate/advanced pentester to learn. Because there's so many resources out there for beginners that you can just go to and pick up. And I distinctly remember like 2 years in being really frustrated by not having any way to increase my skill level without either paying 1600 euros for like a certificate that mm-hmm. didn't really have any connection to the real world anyways. Or basically feeling a little bit helpless until I like really learned to learn on my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that, about the jump from, and I'm going to ask you this question too, but the jump from like base level knowledge to more advanced techniques. There is a huge step in cost. But also like up to those, like the, I'm trying to say not education, but like the skill level required to make that next step is very steep. We've talked about that before too. So.
Yeah. I don't remember the conversation right now, but.
No worries. For language, I'm going to grab something from you real quick. That you said, as an interviewer, you're looking for a combination of things that look attractive for you to bring someone on. You know, you mentioned GitHub is, you know, that's good for your projects or whatever for coding. Enthusiasm is important too. I think I missed a couple there. What else did you mention?
Projects and the base knowledge is really important. So having knowledge just how does networking work? You know, what's the subnet? Do you know how SQL or what SQL is? What mm-hmm. is a database? Just the kind of like annoying questions that you know the answers to, but maybe don't really think about all that much. Because the better somebody answers those questions, the more you know, they're sort of aware of what all is going on. And if somebody can't really answer questions about SQL or a database, you know, there's like quite a lot more to learn, because most starters are there to learn, especially the first year, first couple of months. And if somebody has done none of the work yet, it is probably not worth hiring at this moment in time.
Sure. Yeah, there's no saying that they can't get that foundational knowledge, just as at the moment they're just not, they're not ready.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your go-to comfort movie? Something you can watch repeatedly without getting bored?
I actually don't watch movies at all anymore.
Fair enough.
Well, that's not true. Last weekend I went to the movies. I went to the new Studio Ghibli movie, but I don't really. I don't think I watch anything. I used to be a big movie guy, but not anymore. No, I don't know. Something like Toy Story, probably.
Toy
Story? I watched that a ton. Yeah, okay. Toy Story 2. I watched that like 12 times anyways. I have a little sister, so, you know.
Yeah.
When you babysit, and you just put it on.
It's those movies. I've been going back and watching, I mean, not me personally, but I've watched things like Toy Story or, I'm blanking on some other kind of examples, but my point what's that?
Monsters and Car?
Like Monsters Incorporated is a great movie too.
I watched those movies way too much.
When Sully kept passing, hold on, I'm sorry. My point is, man, my point is they, I'm going back and watching them now with kids, and the movies are invoke a different feeling. Like, a lot of it was humor and stuff at first, but now that I have kids, they hit differently now. You mentioned Monsters Incorporated. When Sully thought Boo was getting trash compacted and he kept passing out.
That's
one of the funniest parts of the movie.
I actually know from the top of my head the scene. So that's,
sorry. All right. That was more for me. Yep.
Okay.
How important are certifications, do you feel? You didn't necessarily bring it up when you talked about things that you look at to get hired, but
I have a bit of a skewed view on certifications. On the one hand, I think they're completely worthless because they don't reflect any real pen testing, and or the skill level is just so much below what I'm at that it's not really worth my time. On the other hand, it's a great way to show that you at least done the legwork. So if you want to enter a job and you have a certification to point at, it's great. I have to admit, like the couple of times that I looked at syllabuses and English.
Syllabi, yeah.
Syllabi, is that the right English word?
For multiple, yeah.
Okay. When I looked at those, I am consistently disappointed by the materials and how they're crafted. It sort of feels like a beginner made a course for me most of the time. And the problem is not necessarily that they don't talk about things, it's they don't talk about the abstract enough, and they don't talk about a lot of the details that I think matter more than just knowing the technical details. Yeah. But I do think a certification is completely worth it. If you don't have a job, you need to get a job. Mm-hmm. Also, they're making it mandatory for some kinds of tests here to have like certain certifications. So I probably am going to do one like within a week or so. I don't mean starting in a week, but just smash out like a small certification. I think there are like five that apply. Haven't really been too impressed with it, so I don't think they will be too much trouble.
Good.
Yeah, and the one thing that certifications also have a little bit trouble with is the date of their publishing is normally quite outdated. especially if they're big and famous, then they're made like at least a couple of years ago. And, you know, how old is Request Smuggling, for example? It's like 3 years old or something. So not that many older certifications handle these types of technical details that now are like the basics.
Yep, I agree. Yep, there's a lot about them that yeah, especially if they're, like you said, especially if they're big, they're already outdated. Would you agree with the statement that certifications could be just, again, another one of the puzzle pieces to helping you get a job?
Yeah, there are like some that are quite impressive, I think, if you don't have a job before. So everybody always points to OSCP as like an impressive one. I personally am a bit less of a fan of it, but you know, it's quite impressive to get it before you have a job. And I think I haven't really looked at the exam yet, but the Neoport Swigger certification looks quite promising for if you don't have a job and you have that certification. For me, when I'm hiring, it becomes so much easier if somebody walks in with that. I haven't seen it yet happen yet, but if somebody walks in with the Port Swigger certification, I'm not like, okay, I don't need to ask him too many technical questions.
Okay.
Because I can sort of rely upon the fact that you know what you're talking about if you have those. So for that, I think they're very handy.
Okay. So is that because you use Port Swigger a lot in your role? Burp Suite, I mean?
Yeah, Burp Suite. I use Burp Suite every single day.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's not really the reason behind it. I think the reason is they go over a lot of, not all of them, but a lot of technical, or a lot of types of vulnerabilities, exploits, and how to actually execute them. And I think they're not complete and they could improve on several areas. I think they're good enough to the point where if a beginner has done them, I can rely upon the fact that like what he's missing, he can learn fairly quickly.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen the exam yet. I see in chat that somebody asked that said it doesn't have to do. Oh, that's OSCP.
Yep, OSCP.
Yeah.
Yep, Master Blaster, just a guy there, has gone through the OSCP specifically, and was not impressed with their documentation.
Yeah, I have looked at the documentation as well. I have to agree with that one.
Yep. Let me ask you this. Yep, I'm going to talk about your current role a little bit more, and then we can bounce back to. You left a couple question marks, which I think is interesting. So, what are your employer's expectations in your current role?
Like, that's fun because I can sort of fill them in myself most of the time.
Okay.
One, I'm like lead weapon test, sort of. So mm-hmm. I'm sort of responsible for the technical details of the weapon testing. So that one of my responsibilities is to check if somebody does a pen test, answer questions, help them, make sure it's done well, finish them properly, also sit in meetings and like give the technical knowledge when it's required. Another one is because I do so many different little things, we do have a product that we're building on. So I don't really have a main responsibility day to day for that, but sometimes I do have like parts of it that are under my responsibility. I did try teaching an intern, so that I took up on that responsibility. I didn't like it that much, I have to admit.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, and I think that's mostly it. It's mainly pen test responsibility. And everything it entails. So the advantage of working at a small company, for example, is if you're bad at dealing with customers, you can sort of delegate it to somebody that's better at it.
Okay.
So we're quite flexible in what we what we do, but you still need to be capable of talking with customers. And more of the consultancy side of pen testing.
Okay.
That's it, I think.
Cool. Okay, well, I guess while we're talking about that, about the intern that you had or whatever, can you talk about working with others?
So it's, I had quite a hectic career so far in working with others. The first guy that taught me, actually my mentor, I really respect his technical skill, but I had such a hard time working with him because of his personality mainly. He doesn't work with us anymore, but he used to. But I always will respect his technical skill and how he looked at things. But at some point, I stopped working with him altogether because of his personality.
Okay.
So that's one. On the other hand, I have one colleague I work with quite closely. He is not quite a senior pen tester. But over the years, we sort of crafted a way where we where he could easily ask questions if they arise. And I could easily figure out like interesting parts of a pen test he's doing, sort of to optimize our strengths. The thing with pen testing, it's always hard to work together with people because it's a mistake to think that two people will finish a pen test at twice as fast as one person. Because you need to learn so much about the test to do it well that I don't think you could. It's a little bit like saying if you have two women pregnant, they will give birth in 4.5 months. It doesn't quite work like that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, quite a lot of customers do see it like that, and sometimes even management. So it's a bit of a balancing act.
Okay. It's interesting you said about working with others, about the, your manner that you and you don't got to get into the specifics of the of the personality, but that was interesting that the what you were able to learn from them based on their personality, because they had that same personality when they were mentoring you. So it's interesting, that dynamic that you brought up. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, he was actually a really good teacher, but the same traits that made him a good teacher made him a horrible coworker.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
At least for me to deal with.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
I feel kind of bad now saying that he was a horrible coworker. I just couldn't deal with him.
No. I've had people that I've worked with in the past. I mean, in restaurants, in the beverage company, in the trucking industry, and they're great people. I'll sit down with them and have a beer with them and chit chat about whatever. But they're horrible coworkers. I'm not saying that your person was horrible, but in my experience, and just the opposite. I've had great coworkers. They hit the mark. They do what they say they're going to do. They're always early on stuff, and they're terrible people. I mean, they're just, you know, outside of work, they're just, you know, awful. But I mean, that's people. You accept them for what they are, and you know, you can pull and learn what you can from them and move on.
Yeah. I'm still friends with him. I don't speak to with him a lot, but yeah, working with him was really difficult for me.
Yeah. How important, and I'm interested why you may have skipped over these and maybe you wanted to talk about them more on stream, but how necessary, important is building relationships, networking?
Yeah. I can tell you why I skipped over this.
Okay, sure.
I happen to have already quite a big network here in the Netherlands, mainly due to the sped up education, and quite a few of my friends landed at different companies.
Okay.
Where they pen test or work in a SOC. So I never spent too much time on it. I know people do. They can provide you great opportunities if you have a good network. With excellent pay or whatever you want to do.
Sure.
On the other hand, it requires effort, serious effort, to maintain connections and to talk to them. And for me, it's just something I don't really want to spend too much effort on.
Okay.
But I know for other people that it landed them great jobs and it helped them a lot. So I felt like answering this wouldn't really help anybody because I happen to have some connections, which are friends,
mm-hmm.
that happen to work in the industry.
Okay.
And I feel like there's a bit of a non-answer. So yeah, that's why.
Well, you may see it that way, but I think that was a great answer. You nailed it. You nailed it with the phrase when you said that. These relationships and this networking, it takes time to cultivate them. It sounds like, tell me if I'm summarizing this best, is that you grew this network, you know, these relationships with people, and then they went out and they got jobs and careers,
yeah.
But you also still maintain that connection with them. You check in from time to time, or you'll like someone's post, or you know, you may see them out and about somewhere or whatever.
Well, I don't really like their posts. Or I'm not that much of a social media guy. It's mainly calling them once in a while.
Okay.
Asking how is it going? How are you doing? Just talking about life. Mm-hmm. That's the advantage of them being actual friends and not just co-workers. Is that you can just talk about random stuff. And that's a great way for me to maintain their relationship, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to do it with like professionals that are only interested like in a professional life, it requires effort. And
yeah.
I'm not that good at it.
No one is.
I think nobody in IT is also particularly well known for their social skills. No offense to anybody in the chat or anywhere.
I don't think you're hurting anyone's feelings in chat. At least not mine. I agree with you. Yeah.
So yeah, it never really has been on the forefront of my thoughts as well.
No, and I'm gonna summarize them again because I think this is important. I think this is important because it does. It takes effort and it's hard, and I still struggle with it. Like people that I know, people that I've created relationships with, that's easy. Like, but the it does take effort. Yeah, it takes genuine. It takes genuine interaction, you know, understanding, you know, what people are going through, and building relationships. I've been moving from just saying networking to incorporating building relationships with it because it's important.
And I also think, just to add on that, nobody's waiting to. For a call from a stranger they barely know, and nobody is like on a Friday evening willing to talk to like somebody just because of a professional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think almost by definition, to keep it going, it has to be like real friends.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with you. I do. Let's talk quickly. If you're listening to the podcast, there was an alarm that just went off. That was a raid for from MSEC, who's being elusive. I want to talk to MSEC as well for the podcast. But thank you very much for the raid. Welcome, Raiders, to Painful IT. I'm your host, Theo. We're on Twitch. Thank you kindly for popping in. We're talking to Tech Penguin. Tech Penguin is a senior penetration tester in the Netherlands, and we're going through and asking him questions about the job, about the job, about networking, about people, about a whole bunch of different things. So all those questions are in the Discord that I've asked them, and there are also going to be they'll be on the GitHub as well if you don't have that. you left another one unanswered in the questionnaire, which was the importance of stepping out of your comfort zone. How do you feel about that?
It's a bit of a difficult one because my comfort zone is entirely different from others.
Okay.
I think when you get started, it's one of the most important things to do. Because you're never gonna get a job if you never, like for me, it was really uncomfortable to apply for internships. For others, it is really natural and they do it with ease. I have a hard time doing things like that. So that's like my comfort zone, but like my work is entirely my comfort zone. So I can like do research or pen test a bunch, and that's like my comfortable place. And then the less comfortable I am is probably the more I interact with customers and do things that I wasn't expecting to do in those days.
Okay.
But for me, it mainly mattered when I applied. Other than that, it didn't matter that much.
Okay.
But I think applying is a bit scary for everybody. So yeah.
The reason why I asked this question, and because, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. But I think because you've settled into your role and you've been in it for a while,
yeah,
and web app pen testing, you're going to be outside your comfort zone when it comes to the skills of web app pen testing a lot less than someone who's just getting into the role, either into the role or also another place where you're outside your comfort zone is this networking or building relationships,
yeah,
or interacting with customers. So my concern with, because I'm an old fart, my concern with talking and seeing people, you know, they build up these massive LinkedIn networks, so they have all these people following them or whatever, but are those real indicators of relationships? Are those real indicators
I what I'm gonna say sounds very mean, but I mean it 100%. Is everybody that I know that has like a big LinkedIn profile was absolutely abysmal when it came to technical skills.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that I knew that I really respected for technical skills were like not on LinkedIn at all, or barely, or was like 10 years out of date. I think my boss looks like he's an employee at some other company. It's like, I think if you're competent, you spend your time on other things. I think LinkedIn is not a place where productive people go. It's a place where you can maybe speak to recruiters. That's what I would use it for.
Mm-hmm.
If you look for competing offers from your job, then it might be nice to update your LinkedIn. But other than that, I see no use for it.
Okay.
And I think the fancier your LinkedIn is, the more the less likely it is that I want to work with you.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds very mean, but I sort of found that's the case, mm-hmm, and I don't even quite know why. I can make all kinds of assumptions about it, but
from
the people that I see.
I just think it's a piece. I think it may be different in the Netherlands. It may be. I kind of look at it as a mixed bag, or part, you know, just another piece of the puzzle. I mean, you want to see that they are somewhat active on LinkedIn, but I don't want to see, see five posts a day. I don't want to see, what I mean?
I'm gonna be completely honest. When I'm hiring, I don't want to look at your social media, and I view LinkedIn as just another social media.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to be work related a little bit more.
Yeah.
I feel it would be a little bit unfair to look at somebody's social media. I mean, everybody can be unhinged from time to time. And I don't think that's great for a great hiring practice, because how somebody is at home doesn't mean he is that way in the office. The problem that I have more with LinkedIn is that it's really work related and people use it to look for work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to verify if somebody is actually what he says he is. Yeah, it's what I said. Like, if you are looking to talk to recruiters, just make a fancy LinkedIn and they will contact you. If you actually already have a job and you don't really want to talk to them, your LinkedIn probably reflects that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't particularly enjoy talking to recruiters that much.
No.
Maybe others do.
You're not waiting on a Friday evening for a recruiter call? Yeah.
One of the last things that I want to hear or get an email from like somebody that wants me to offer me a job with like half the money that I make now.
MSEC, thanks for mentioning that. I was going to message you for that very reason. Where are we? I can't remember. We got off on a tangent on something, but. We were talking about comfort zone. We were talking about LinkedIn some more. We talked about your employer's expectations. And your hours now. What about... Master Blast. I don't know what I said. You mentioned your hours. Can you go into a little bit more about... But you're flexible and this gets called upon occasionally.
Yeah, so I work 4 days a week. 32 hours. In my contract, it states that I can always switch to 5 days.
Is that considered full time over there in Netherlands?
No, 4 days is 5 days is full time. Four days is not. But in my contract, it states I can always go for 5 days.
Okay.
I just never really felt the appeal for it that much. I'm not that much of a person that needs a whole lot of money, so I don't do it for the money.
Okay.
So I never really got like the 5 days, and I've been burned out in my life once, and that's a feeling I rather avoid. And I feel like four days is perfectly balanced. It became harder because I learn so much at home now. And when you start off, you learn a lot at your job. At some point, it sort of transitions to learning at home. And it sort of feels like I'm working 5 days now anyways because of that. Yeah, and I'm quite flexible. Sometimes we have customers and sometimes things need to get done on a Friday and then I just work the Friday and maybe take the next Monday off or whatever. I'm completely open to these kinds of things mainly because of work culture. If somebody else asks for me to help a bit extra, I can. And if I ask to switch a day up, I can. So it gives me a really relaxed work environment that also allows for me to do things on my own time. So if I want to go a weekend to the UK, which I did last weekend, I can, and I can just switch up some days to stay there longer or things like that.
Okay, nice. We're getting close on the end. Is if you have any questions you want to, and you provided some too that we want to talk about, but. You mentioned burnout, and you don't have to reveal any more or less that you're comfortable with. But do you have any advice to avoid burnout? Is there something that you was glaringly obvious that you wish you listened to? Was it something incremental that you ignored? You know what?
It was incremental for me.
Okay.
And I noticed it quite late when I noticed that I was counting down the days until my next vacation.
Okay.
And at that point I was like, this is not healthy. I should not be at work counting down the days until I'm not at work. That clearly means something is going wrong.
Okay.
I don't think I have good advice. Except maybe spend your, like, if you already work, spend your spare time doing things you enjoy. Because if you don't do things you enjoy, you end up like just cleaning in your weekend and it feels like chores, just cleaning your home, getting food, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And if you only have that in your weekend, and your weekday is work, then you really have nothing to look forward to. So yeah, I would say always have like something to look forward to in the next like week or so to do. And then that's how I sort of try to avoid burnout mostly.
Okay. No, I can appreciate that. I have it marked on a calendar, but I don't think anyone ever described indicator of burnout as, you know, counting the days down to a vacation. That was interesting for a way to put that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it was for me how I noticed that it wasn't healthy, like the position mm-hmm. I was in.
Again, and just an indicator.
To be fair, sometimes I work a lot, and there have been years where I didn't take a vacation at all. So, or maybe like a couple of weeks between Christmas and New Year's. So, yeah, that definitely contributed. Now I'm off way more.
Okay, cool. Good morning, Trash Puppy. Thanks for popping in chat. Okay, so you had a couple things written down you wanted to come over, you wanted to go yeah. over too. You had pen testing and consultancy.
Yeah, they're two different things in my opinion.
Okay.
So one of the key things to realize when you apply to be a pen tester is that consultancy is social work. You need to educate your customers, you get paid to help them. Pen testing is quite the opposite. It's you're sitting in a room behind your PC, hacking a bunch and trying to break things. Mm-hmm. These two don't always mix that well together. A lot of great pen testers are awful consultants, and a lot of great consultants are awful pen testers.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of interesting that when you decide to work as a pen tester, you could sort of choose which one you want to be. Do you want to do both? Do you want to be really good in pen testing and don't really want to do the consultancy?
Mm-hmm.
And I think these things matter more for maybe a slightly more senior person. But when you look for a job, that's like one of the things that I would pay attention to is like how much consultancy would I need to do? Because I'm not the biggest fan of being a consultant. On the other hand, I don't mind it that much, but I know from people that are pen testers that I would never put them in a consultant position. Well, they're arguably some of the best pen testers that I know.
Okay.
And yeah, a pen tester is also worthless if you don't consult your customers, right?
Right.
So
again, then it's just a report, an attachment in an email.
Yeah,
really. Just a report. That's interesting. I thought you were going a different way. I thought you were going a different way when you brought those topics up. So it caught me a little bit by surprise, but I appreciate the, you know, the explanation, the delineation of the two. The company that I work for, we have consultants and we have, you know, experts or pen testers or tax people or governance, risk and compliance people, but they encourage both of those people to just be, you know, they encourage us to be a resource for our clients. So they may call in and, you know, ask the pen tester a couple things about what they did, or they may bring a consultant in to, you know, take a look at their infrastructure to see exactly what they need. But they encourage them both to be a resource for the customer, the client.
Yeah. So. I would say that everybody is a consultant in that case, because
yeah.
I really delineate a pen tester from a consultant in the responsibility of having to talk to customers.
Yep.
Yeah, and just to note, I don't look down on consultants. I think they are more required than pen testers.
Yeah.
It's just that some consultants are really good in consulting and really bad at pen testing. And then it's best to find like one that's good in the one and one that's good in the other, and then have them work together.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you could do. And that's also, just to say it one more time, I think most people in IT are not the most social. So if this is a way for you to actually still be able to do the job,
mm-hmm.
Just to pen test and have somebody else talk to you that's actually consulting, that's a great way to still have a fun job.
Okay. You also had listed, how do you provide value to your customers?
Yeah. So that ties into that a lot. Mm-hmm. So your customers are paying you in the end, but what are they paying you for? In a pen test, just to simplify it quite a lot, because it's not always the case, they pay you to find vulnerabilities in their environment. Does that mean that just pointing out all the vulnerabilities helps them a lot? It doesn't. There might be more value for your customer just to note that, for example, hey, your patch management seems a little bit off. You're like always like 2 months late with critical patches. That might be better advice than just to point out, hey, you have 4 critical bugs every couple of months. Because that way they can combat their issue systematically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those problems that I ran into a lot, is that I really like to do more advanced pen testing and the complex things, but there's not always value there for my customers. So if you want to pay me a lot of money to do that, I will do that. But for most customers, especially starting customers, it might be better to just get a web application scan than a full pen test.
Okay.
I talked about this quite a lot with some of my SOC friends. It's like, what is the place for a pen test? Because you shouldn't just expect pen tests to be always useful. If you look at bang for your buck, an automated scan is quite cheap. And if you just run an automated scan on your environment, it most likely will find quite a lot if you've never done it before. So I would argue that it's better to get an automated scan than to get a pen test if you've never had like scans before. On the other hand, if you're scanned regularly and maybe have been pen tested before, it might be great to spend a little bit more money to look for like a complete manual pen test or like an in-depth pen test, more of a research type. So the value really depends on what the customer wants and what they need, and not always what you deliver.
I am taking notes, because that is great advice. That is great advice. And I think it also leans into also being a resource for your customer, building a relationship for your client, where you're not just there, you know, they send you an email, okay, ready for our next engagement. Okay, we'll start on this day. You know, it's stepping back after 2 or 3 years of pen tests or 2 or 3 years of automated scans and say, look, the scans are still showing the same thing year after year. Perhaps we need to, or whatever they find is whatever they find. Perhaps we need to do a deep dive. It's about building those relationships and being able to say to the client, look, you get pen tests every year and you're paying us a lot of money, but a lot of things are locked down. Maybe you can just do an automated scan or whatever it is. It's about the building.
No, let me. If I normally explain this with a graph, I sort of view like an application as something that has like an age to it and a security level. So when it's really young, the security level is normally quite low. So for those, a scan is quite useful, and maybe a pen test performed by junior pen testers. But if you have been pen tested quite a lot, then there's not much value to be had in being pen tested by junior pen testers. Then you might want to hire several seniors or like a more expensive pen test to actually unearth, find the remaining maybe vulnerabilities or technical issues that you still might have. It's more expensive for an older application to be pen test, because it requires more effort to pen test well. Something that's more secure. When something is not that secure, it's cheaper to just say, let's just do an automated scan and fix everything that comes out of that. And if you have done that, then maybe we can start looking for a pen test. Because your customer can only fix so many things at once. And if an automated scan already like gives them half a year of work, why add a pen test on top of it?
Okay.
Also, it's way cheaper. And a lot of customers like to hear it's cheaper to do things a certain way.
Okay. I appreciate you stopping me and course correct me there, because I would have just kept going. Thank you. All right, then your next topic was that what do your customers value, scoping, estimations, et cetera? Is that similar to what we are already talking about?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this. So in the scoping, it's important to ask, mm-hmm. maybe, have you been pen tested before? And if they say no, and have you had done a security scan or like a source code scan? And then you can maybe advise them. It sort of depends on the stage of your scoping. Sometimes you're prior to a contract, sometimes you're after a contract. It's a bit complicated, but sometimes the advice can be just like, why are you even paying us for a pen test? Just get a scan. And I think that ties into trying to help your customer instead of trying to make money off them.
Is it safe to say that different companies' security levels will dictate what will necessitate or dictate what they should be looking for?
Yeah, a bank shouldn't be satisfied with just a scan. Okay. If you have a banking application, they definitely should higher pen test, because the requirement for the security level of the app, even if it's immature, is way higher. So it's more important to test that and get everything out than your local bakery. Your local bakery doesn't need to have a pen test every couple of months.
No.
Just get him scanned and he will be good, most likely.
Okay.
Yeah, you also have pen test by law, just the guy in chat pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a nuanced topic. There's like a lots of issues that come above, also with acquisitions. Sometimes it's required to get a pen test. Give me a moment, I need to sneeze.
Yeah, you're good.
So sometimes with acquisitions and by laws, it's quite often that places are required to get a pen test. Those are not my favorite pen tests to do, because most of the time you're not quite welcome there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you only do this because we need you to do this and not because they want you to do it. Yeah, it requires a lot of nuance there on what they get and what they want. Also, pen testing... And just keep in mind, there's no legal definition for it. It can mean like putting a child behind a PC and just sending random stuff to it. Or it can mean taking some actual effort to do things. So by law, there are like lots of ways to play with it that people have. So you see companies going for the cheapest pen test where you know they practically just run NASA's over it and call it a day. Just to make sure that they, abide by the law. So there's like, I don't like that argument that much, and it's not my favorite type of customer.
Ones that have legal obligations to do. Yeah, it is a little bit unless you. It can be a hostile environment. I mean, they need this done. They got to check a box. They can't do it internally because that's a conflict of interest, and what you find is what you find. And I mean, your name is on the line too. Like you're putting your name on a report, you're giving it to them, they're taking it to their
Well, that ties in with scoping as well. I don't mind if you pay me for 3 days of pen testing. I'm completely fine with it. It will just say blandly in the report, we got paid for 3 days and our advice was 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Best effort. Kind of thing. We don't mind, but yeah, just to make the point, there's no good legal system in place where they require something from me. Like as a pen tester, I can do nothing and it's still a pen test by law. So I don't like those kinds of tests and frameworks specifically.
Yep. Well, that's all I had. Did you have any other questions that you come up with off the top of your head, or while we're talking about this, does chat have any other questions that they want? You don't have to use the mute function. anymore. Thanks, Master Blaster. But if the chat has any other questions or that they have for Tech Penguin, we can go over them now. What inspired your username? Oh, MSEX. Good question.
I like penguins and I like tech. So a tech penguin is quite easy. I know Linux also has like a penguin as as an icon or mascot. But that has nothing to do with it. I just like penguins.
Okay.
I think they're fun little animals. Yeah, sometimes I will be in Discord, not that often. I have been kind of busy lately, and I'm also kind of sick right now. Maybe later, like somewhere February or something. I try to tune in occasionally. Pineapple doesn't belong on pizza.
I don't know if this was a good idea. I may not be able to publish this now. Pineapple, ham, and sauce on pizza. It's delicious. I like it. You're not a fan at all.
I hate pineapple. And the other ones I wouldn't know. I don't eat meat. So
okay. To each his own. Whatever. No. I can't help it. You have terrible taste buds, but whatever. Norris. Oh, how much wood chuck? Can a wood chuck chuck? Thank you, Spectre.
Pineapple, jalapeno, and barbecue sauce. I have no idea how much wood chuck can chuck.
All right. Yeah, that's all I had. Tech Penguin, I appreciate.
It was lovely.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Thank you for chit-chatting with us. Thank you for answering my questions. I appreciate how honest you were and vulnerable and answering questions. This stuff's not easy for me, but I think it's. With the comfort zone thing, I just think it's important for me to get outside it, ask questions, fumble over my words from time to time, and get great answers from people like you.
That's fine. I had a lovely time. I'll speak to you later, I think.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll have a good one. We'll see you around.
Bye, Chad. Have a lovely day.
See ya. Well, that was great. Spectacular. MSEC, I need a date. You can always roast me. Oh, I turned off TTS while I was saying goodbye. Bo Machina.
I love that TTS pronounced the Jan Jalapeno.
Sec says. Sec clap. Spectre says.
I like how Theo made it so I can't harass him about podcasts anymore.
We're just rocking him out. You kidding me? That's my fourth one.
Did you stop the recording? Can we roast now?
Yeah, you can go back and look at the VOD.
Now we find out Theo didn't press record, and we'll have to do it again.
Master Blaster says,
ask Miss Theo if she's available.
Spectre says,
does your wife know you are looking for a date online?
You the one just asking says,
hi, Tim Theo.